Welcome back to Through the Word. I'm your host, Peyton Jones, and today we'll be in 2 Chronicles chapter 17. Jumping Jehoshaphat, we're going to talk about King Jehoshaphat, and it's spelled P-H-T, fat. And that's because he was the fattest in all the kings, because verse 3 tells us the Lord was with Jehoshaphat because he walked in the earlier ways of his father David. He did not seek out the Baals, but sought the God of his father and walked in his commandments and not according to the practice of Israel. One of the best compliments is given about Jehoshaphat that could ever be given, and that was in verse 6 that he had courageous faith. Verse 6 says that his heart was courageous in the ways of the Lord. I can remember when I was in high school, and they asked us to say one statement about ourselves, something that summarized who we were at that stage in our life. Well, I can remember putting Romans 5 verse 1, because after all, the biggest thing in my life was the fact that Jesus had justified me, that my heart was at peace with God because of the work that Christ did, and because all I did was simply put my trust and faith in Him. And that simply summed up my life at that point. But when you die, somebody else writes your epitaph, that one or two-liner, that thing that goes on your gravestone. And you don't get to write that unless, of course, you're vain enough to tell people in advance, hey, I want this on my gravestone. Well, Jehoshaphat had as his epitaph that he had courageous faith. And that should give us time to pause and think today. What is the thing that people will say about me when I'm dead? And will it be right? Will it be accurate? Will it actually be descriptive of who I really was? Because I've been in many a funeral where what was said about the individual wasn't actually true. It was just nice. A famous bumper sticker a few decades ago said, "Live so that the preacher won't have to lie at your funeral." Now, you might have ordinarily skipped over verses 7 through 9, but they're pretty rock and roll. They're fat with a P-H-A-T. It says, "In the third year of his reign, he sent his officials, Ben-Hail, Obadiah, Zechariah, Nathanael, and Micaiah, to teach in the cities of Judah. And with them the Levites, Shemaiah, Nethaniah, Zebadiah, Asahel, Shemimaroth, Jehonahathath, Adonijah, Tobijah, and Tobadonijah." These are funny. Tobadonijah, that's just funny. Tobadonijah, that name. How could I not? "And with these Levites, the priest, Elishama, and Jehoram." Don't forget, all the way throughout this, you need to grab your big book of Bible baby names and hold on to these for your kids. Verse 9 says, "And they taught in Judah, having the book of the law of the Lord with them. They went about throughout all the cities of Judah and taught among the people." In other words, Levites became traveling preachers, and that is just about one of the fattest things in the Old Testament. There's always been a little bit of a division between how clergy ought to operate. For example, in the Middle Ages, they thought that the holy people, the monks, should be sequestered away in monasteries, and there they would be praying and reading scripture and fasting all the time. And it was probably good to have people who watch your back and pray. But John Wesley burst on the scene with the Methodists, and he changed everything. He invented something. In fact, we could say that he rediscovered something, both from the New Testament and from this passage, that needed to be done. He set up the existence of the circuit riders, which were preachers on horseback that he deployed all throughout the United Kingdom. In fact, when he built his first chapel, called the New Rooms in Bristol, he designed a three-story building where the bottom floor was horse stables. You went up a pair of stairs to the actual chapel that was ornate and beautiful, but then there was a third story over top that housed the circuit riders who would go on a circuit all around a predefined area, preach the gospel, meet in homes, preach in the fields and marketplaces, and come back and get some rest. This was to stop the biblical illiteracy that had crept into Britain. And John Wesley knew that these preachers could go out like these Levites and actually instruct the people in the ways of the Lord. And of course, what happened was by the end of that the Great Awakening in America and the Methodist Revival in the UK. What started as a small band of friends at Oxford University and Christ College at the School of Divinity turned into eventually 10% of the British population making up the Methodist denomination. The creative and strategic genius that John Wesley was primarily is evidenced by what he set up in the circuit riders, which is what we see Jehoshaphat doing here. Verse 9 told us their subject matter was the book of the law of the Lord. So they carried that fat, P-H-A-T, Torah or scroll around with them and taught the people. Verse 10 tells us the result. And the fear of the Lord fell upon all the kingdoms of the lands and were around Judah, and they made no war against Jehoshaphat. As the people began to fear the Lord, so the nations around them began to fear them, because they knew that God was with them. They had given God his due, and God had given them their place. Because of all this, God made Jehoshaphat great. People began to bring him tribute, as we read about in this passage. As Jehoshaphat looked after the things of God, so God looked after the things of Jehoshaphat. Therefore, the Lord established the kingdom in his hand. We have to remember that this chapter is the greater part of a book, and there is a theme in 2 Chronicles. Recently, the theme of these chapters has been cause and effect, and as much as people like to talk about grace, and I surely do, it is still a biblical truth that God is, and I quote Hebrews 11, a rewarder of those who diligently seek him by faith. You and I, we don't deserve anything that we get through the gospel, and we have to always avoid the trap that says, I did this, therefore God owes me that. God owes us nothing, and yet we see that God is an extra blesser. Not only did he give us grace and salvation, but any bit that we do for him, Jesus said, even giving a cup of water to a prophet will receive a prophet's reward. That shows us that Jesus is the kind of God who loves to overbless and extra bless his people. So what you do matters, and God responds to every little thing we do, including giving someone a cup of water who's thirsty. God may not base our salvation upon the good we do, but he does base his rewards on it. As Paul says, there is great reward for godliness both in this life and the life to come. In the case of a king, it looked like prosperity, but in our case, it might look like peace of mind or a healthy family. Rewards come in all shapes and sizes. And as David wrote in Psalm 119, in keeping your law, O God, there is great reward. Think about it. Jesus kept the law for us because we couldn't, and we inherited the blessing of being made righteous in his eyes. Keeping the law mattered to God when Christ did it for us, and it still matters to him now when we treat what he says and his commandments with respect. Although everything is of grace, never let the grace of God become, Paul said, a cover-up for sin.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.